This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, November 20th, 2009. From New York City, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up on today's newscast, the U.S. Senate will vote tomorrow on whether debate can begin on health care, and some say the stakes are especially high for women.
Being pregnant should not be a pre-existing condition so you can't get health care. We should be doing the opposite in this country. We should be making sure that moms and their babies have good health care.
We go to Argentina, where survivors of torture anxiously await a historic human rights trial. And unemployment isn't hitting all communities the same. Some are questioning whether enough is being done to create jobs in Black and Latino neighborhoods.
When we moved into the neighborhood, there was little or no economic activity, and part of the intent of our coming in was to change that.
Those stories and more right after the headlines.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Following a controversial announcement yesterday that the California State University system would raise tuition rates by 32%, students at the Berkeley campus mobilized and are now holding a sit-in. Former FSRN technical staffer Puck Lowe is among the students holding up in a campus building.
We've been here since last night, and Wheeler Hall. What we're asking for is for the reinstating of all of the workers who've been furloughed or laid off. And we're asking for amnesty for everyone in the building and for an end to the fee hike. And those are the conditions that we have to leave the building. And we're trying to hold on to the building as long as we can.
She says that between 40 and 60 students are in the building, and the crowd continues to grow outside as well. She says police used a baton on one protester, but other than that, things have been relatively peaceful.
People are very, very upset. I mean, you know, this is not an action that people take lightly. Like, people have spent the night and the morning agonizing over the fact that they're losing they might be losing their fellowships, they might be losing their jobs. I might be losing my job. You know, I've skipped a class that I'm probably going to get dropped from. I mean, people are not here for fun. This is an emergency, you know. The measures that were taken are taken in that light.
Students are also protesting on the UCLA and UC Santa Cruz campuses. With much of the country moving towards a greener energy supply, Texas seems to be moving the other way. The state currently has 12 new coal-fired power plants in the works. Environmental, religious, and medical groups are requesting intervention from the Environmental Protection Agency. Shannon Young has more.
Texas leads the nation in greenhouse gas emissions and coal-fired power plants. The state accounts for more than 11% of the nation's emissions of carbon dioxide. That figure is likely to increase if 12 new proposed coal-fired plants become functional. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, or TCEQ, has the legal authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions in the Lone Star State. But every member of the commission is an appointee of Republican Governor Rick Perry, who is a proponent of coal. Advocacy group Public Citizen filed a lawsuit in October, arguing that the TCEQ has not been acting in the public interest. On Thursday, members of the Sierra Club, Public Citizen, and the Interfaith Environmental Alliance delivered more than 2,000 signatures to regional EPA headquarters in Dallas. They're calling on the federal government to block the 12 proposed plants and to use the Clean Air Act to review the permits of the 17 facilities already in operation. Shannon Young, FSRN.
On Sunday, Romanians will go to the polls to try to resolve a political crisis that has left the country without a government for 2 months. FSRN's Donna Lepidot reports from Bucharest.
The situation here is a bit unusual because parliament dissolved the government 2 months ago. Now the administration is working with an interim government that has technically expired. This has caused problems with the economy. The IMF has delayed a transfer of 1.5 billion euros in loan money, saying it won't be delivered until January or March. Budget legislation has also been held up, and funding for the public sector could run out by the end of the year. The economic problems, in turn, have caused a string of protests and strikes by the Romanian people. Voter turnout has been steadily declining since 2000. Residents are very disappointed by politicians and don't believe they can help. 21 million people are expected to vote in Sunday's elections. Dana Lepodate, FSRN, Bucharest.
The British government unveiled its digital economy bill today, a plan steeped in controversy. In one provision, the government wants to tax landline phones to fund super-fast broadband in rural areas. It also seeks to crack down on illegal internet file sharing and downloads. Like France, which has created a three strikes and you're out law, the bill includes powers to cancel people's internet if they don't comply. But will it work? FSRN's Tom Allen has been looking for perpetrators on the streets of Edinburgh.
I'm trying to find some software pirates, but what do they look like? Right, here we go, lots of students here. Yeah, you look like a bit of a dodgy bloke. Do you ever download stuff illegally?
I'm embarrassed to say I have.
And what would it take to discourage or stop you from doing that kind of thing? How about a strongly worded letter?
I'm not sure if that would discourage me. The amount that I do it, I think, isn't anything too despicable. I really use downloading music like I use the library. It's mostly to find out about kinds of music that I don't normally purchase. But when there's an artist or a group that I like, I purchase their music, and I try to encourage people to buy music whenever possible.
So it's kind of a try before you buy thing?
That sort of thing.
The government's hoping that two warning letters will be enough to cut downloads by at least 70%. But if that fails, it will be able to cap or cut off internet connections. The new bill has had a mixed response. The music industry is happy, but internet service providers are not. The law won't go into effect for some time, but be warned, illegal downloads are being monitored in the UK as of today. Tom Allen, FSRN, Edinburgh.
And that's headlines for Free Speech Radio News. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
This is Dorian Marina in New York. The health care bill's long journey through the Senate will hit a milestone on Saturday. Senators will vote on a procedural motion that allows debate to begin. It's being called a test vote, since it will give Senate leaders a sense of the support they have for the bill. Three key centrist Democrats and independent Joe Lieberman have agreed to vote yea on Saturday, leaving just one more maybe, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas. The healthcare discussion so far has raised many issues of concern, and for some Democrats, healthcare is a feminist issue. They hope Saturday's vote will address gender disparities in the current system. FSRN's Tanya Snyder reports from Washington.
In our current healthcare system, women often pay more for less coverage. According to a study by the National Women's Law Center, women are charged up to 48% more than men of the same age for identical insurance coverage. Lisa Codispoti is senior counsel with the center's Health and Reproductive Rights Program.
You couldn't look to maternity coverage as the reason why, because in fact, the overwhelming majority of these plans do not include maternity coverage at all. And we looked at over 3,500 plans nationally. 60% of those plans did not include one penny of coverage for maternity care at all. So you couldn't even use maternity coverage as an excuse for why it was that women were being charged more than men.
With women still getting paid 77 cents for every dollar a man makes, these disparities can hit hard. Some Democratic women in the Senate see the current bill as a way to fix the problem. It would ban gender rating, the practice of charging women more for coverage, as well as rating by health status, the notorious pre-existing condition exclusion. Senator Barbara Mikulski of Maryland has borne the banner of women's rights in health care.
We did make advances for equal pay for equal work. Now we're calling upon the women of America to suit up to get equal insurance for equal premiums.
Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota agrees. She helped get a law passed in her state guaranteeing women a 48-hour hospital stay after her own experience with a complicated birth.
Maternity care. Being pregnant should not be a pre-existing condition so you can't get health care. We should be doing the opposite. in this country. We should be making sure that moms and their babies have good health care.
Having had a cesarean section is often considered a pre-existing condition. Even domestic violence falls under that category in 8 states and the District of Columbia. So women forced to seek medical attention because they've been abused can find themselves unprotected yet again.
You think about these women who are already in a very weak and vulnerable state, and then to find out they can't even go see a doctor, which is part of their recovery, that they can't even mend.
There are countless ways women find themselves more vulnerable than men when it comes to insurance coverage, according to Lisa Cotispati.
Women face greater insurance instability because they are more likely to be covered as a dependent on a spouse or family member's health insurance policy. So that means that they need to stay in that marriage, that their spouse has to keep that job that has health insurance, or what we're finding is that women that have an older spouse that qualifies for Medicare, they then lose that health insurance.
The House bill that passed 2 weeks ago added another insecurity to women's coverage. An amendment inserted by Democrat Bart Stupak severely restricted the ways insurance can cover abortions, going far beyond the existing ban on using federal funds for abortion access. The Senate bill is somewhat less restrictive than the House version. Usha Ranji is the senior policy analyst of the Women's Healthcare Program at the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Health insurance in general protects against a lot of events that are unplanned, and that's why we, you know, really think it's important to have comprehensive benefits in a plan, because that's sort of the nature of health and illness. And I think an abortion falls right in there as well.
Over the last few days, the Department of Health and Human Services has come out with a recommendation that women get fewer mammograms, and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists has said that most women probably don't need annual pap smears. The announcement surprised a lot of women who thought they were being responsible by getting frequent screenings. And some women have said this is an early form of healthcare rationing under what they call Obamacare. But gynecologists say it's a safe and studied way of keeping healthcare costs down. And in the end, cost containment may be the most important element in increasing health coverage for women. Tanya Snyder, FSRN.
The official unemployment rate has passed 10% nationwide, and if you add in other jobless people like part-time workers or those who have given up actively looking for work, the rate is more than 17%. The numbers have sent policy experts into panic mode, but for many communities and neighborhoods, unemployment has been above 10% for years. The unemployment rate for African Americans nationwide is close to 16%. For Latinos, it is 13%. A deeper look at numbers is even more troubling. 5 urban areas nationwide have an unemployment rate around 50% for black males. That's in Buffalo, San Diego, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee. Federal economic stimulus dollars are trying to reverse that trend, but groups are questioning whether enough attention is going to communities of color. On Thursday, members of the Congressional Black Caucus forced a postponement of the federal regulation reform because they said not enough is being done to stimulate jobs in communities they represent. For a closer look, we go to Richmond, Virginia, where the jobless rate for black males is around 40%. We're joined by Claude Stevens, Chief Operating Officer with Boas and Ruth, a community group that has had success in turning around a neighborhood there. Welcome to Free Speech Radio News.
Glad to be a part, sir.
Your organization is based in Highland Park. Describe that neighborhood for us.
Well, Highland Park is a community that's been a part of Richmond for a long time, and somewhere in the 60s and 70s, there was a white flight that impacted this neighborhood. It's one of the, at that time, it was one of the upscale neighborhoods. Since then, it's fallen on hard times. When we moved into the neighborhood 7 years ago, there was little or no economic activity. I believe officially within the 3 or 4 block area that we were in, there was one open operating business full-time, one sort of part-time. And part of the intent of our coming in was to change that.
And in those 7 years you've been there, does it seem like things are, or conditions are getting better or worse with this recession?
Well, when you come into this area now, you'll see two things that were different than when we started. One is the vitality that comes from not only the businesses that we've opened here, but others, a few others that have started as well. And then you'll see the absence of the drug activity and the associated dysfunction that goes with that. All of that sort of activity has moved out of this area.
Now, talk about that relationship. Your program does run its own businesses there in the neighborhood. Could you explain how that works?
Yeah, we're what's commonly referred to as a social enterprise form of nonprofit as opposed to social welfare. And so part of our strategy is to revitalize the community through economic development. And we started out with a business that sells used furniture. It was related to the background of the CFO, Martha Rollins. And since then, we've grown to half a dozen small enterprises.
And you mentioned the philosophy behind your organization of setting up these businesses to stimulate the local community. Talk about the effect of that on the community overall.
Well, as I cited earlier, the absence of the drug trade in the community, the first couple of years that we were here, there were actually five or six murders that took place right outside our doors. Since then, because of the movement of the drug traffic, that doesn't happen anymore.
A conversation about unemployment really can't take place outside of incarceration and incarceration rates. The Department of Justice figures, they show that blacks are five times more likely than whites to be put in jail, and that's a number that has steadily risen over the past two decades. What has your program done to address this?
Well, just to cite a specific statistic for this area, there are some 200 people who are released from jail here in Richmond every week, and that's on top of those that come out of the state and the federal prisons. And one of the things that we've done is intentionally develop relationships with the sheriff's department that runs the jail, with the police department that is responsible for bringing folks in, with the Department of Corrections, and other community organizations that work with this population to provide an alternative to what commonly leads to recidivism.
We've been speaking with Claude Stevens of Boas and Ruth, a community group in Richmond, Virginia that works to create jobs and economic stability for local residents. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, sir, for inviting me.
Texas Congressmember Ron Paul is celebrating after a House committee approved his Audit the Fed bill, a provision to more closely scrutinize the Federal Reserve. Paul, an advocate of abolishing the Federal Reserve, has been working on this issue for decades. He teamed up with Florida Democrat Alan Grayson on the provision. With a vote of 43-26, the House Financial Services Committee approved adding it to the financial reform package. Paul, also author of the book End the Fed, spoke Thursday before the vote.
This is what transparency is all about. Who's benefiting? And where are the trillions of dollars going? We're not talking about a couple hundred billion dollars. We're talking about a portfolio of trillions of dollars, and there's very little known about it.
The Paul Grayson Amendment would allow for the first independent audit of the Federal Reserve since it was created almost a century ago. It would give the General Accountability Office wide latitude in reviewing and auditing the Federal Reserve, including the recent bank bailouts, how it sets interest rates, and relationships with foreign central banks. Critics of the Reserve say it's always operated in secret, and this provision will bring about much-needed transparency. Fed Chair Ben Bernanke and other critics say it could be destructive to the financial system and insist the Fed must maintain its independence. In Argentina, the president and a council of judges postponed a human rights trial for crimes committed during the nation's military dictatorship of the 1970s and 80s. The trial was supposed to examine crimes committed at a Navy mechanic school, which served as a clandestine detention center and was used to torture and disappear thousands of people. FSRN's Marie Trigona visited the detention center and files this report.
More than 30,000 people were forcefully disappeared during Argentina's military dictatorship from 1976 to 1983. Kidnapped by commando groups in the middle of the night, they were taken to clandestine detention centers. The largest and most notorious torture center, the Yesma Navy Mechanics School in Buenos Aires, still stands today, but as a museum to memorialize the disappeared. Torture survivor Victor Bastera was held at the Yesma for 4 years. In the basement of the Yesma's officers' quarters, Bastera traversed through the same space where he and other detainees were imprisoned and tortured.
La huevera porque aparte de los paneles isonóricos que tenía, estaba toda forrada con envases de huevos.
This area was called the Oivera, or egg cup, because the walls were lined with egg cartons to drown out noises. There were different teams of torturers. The police, Coast Guard, Naval Guard, Secret Service, and the Penitentiary Service all had torture teams. They rotated. They were always active, especially when they had a prisoner who had information. They could torture the person for days. On one occasion, they tortured me for 2 days without stopping. They would constantly rotate posts because the torturers would get tired.
Así que ellos permanentemente estaban cambiándose porque se cansaban los tipos.
5,000 people were detained and disappeared at the Yesma Navy Mechanics School. After more than 3 decades, survivors and their families anticipated this week's trial of 19 officers who worked at the Yesma and now face charges of human rights abuses, torture, and murder. Bastera, who will testify in the trial, took photos of officers and prisoners during his detention, later risking his life, smuggling them out to provide evidence that led to this trial. Many say these are landmark trials for Argentina. Juan de Wandalier is with the human rights group SERPAGE, the Peace and Justice Service.
La Marina, la Armada nunca ha sido tocado por juicio. La ESMA es un edificio simbólico.
The Marine Corps in Argentina has never faced any trials. The ESMA is a symbolic building and carries a lot of weight for Argentines. Thousands of people were disappeared from the ESMA, most of whom were thrown from planes into the sea after being drugged. It's a trial where there's more than one defendant. A number of repressors are facing trial. This trial will bring evidence showing how the ESMA functioned, because not only Marines and military officers are facing trial, but also police and civilians. In this aspect, the trial is important, because it will further dismantle the wall of impunity.
Since the Supreme Court overturned amnesty laws barring courts from trying officers involved in human rights abuses during the dictatorship, 26 trials have begun. While some observers say justice is coming too slow, human rights lawyer Carolina Varsky points out that lawyers must follow strict procedures to ensure that sentences served will be long-standing.
Yo creo que en ese sentido Argentina y poder avanzar en el juzgamiento.
Argentina has progressed in the trials, using its own judicial system and not an international court. While we are proud that we can carry out justice in our own country, I wish the trials were faster because relatives of victims are dying. The repressors are dying. The number of accused repressors who have not testified because they are declared incompetent or who have died before going to trial is quite high. We must play by the rules of the courts. It is difficult to present evidence to the courts 33 years after the actual events took place, and with a state that destroyed much of the evidence, burning papers that could incriminate the military.
The trial is now scheduled for December 11th, and many are frustrated, concerned more postponements are possible. Veronica Castelli is an activist with Hijos, a group representing children of the disappeared. Her parents were killed during the junta.
We have waited for more than 30 years. We can't continue to wait. We don't want to wait. We want justice for all the disappeared and all the mothers and grandmothers at Plaza de Mayo to live to see it. We can't wait 30 more years.
When the trial finally does take place, more than 200 witnesses are expected to testify. Marie Trigona, FSRN, Buenos Aires.
As students in California protest against fee increases, tens of thousands of students also took to the streets in Europe this week. Thousands of others have been occupying the main lecture theaters at their universities. In Germany, students are protesting against what's called the Bologna process, which aims to standardize the higher education system across Europe so that students can move between institutions in different countries. But students say the changes are making it difficult to earn a degree. FSRN's Cinnamon Nepard has more from Berlin.
The Bologna Declaration requires European countries to introduce the bachelor-master system, which takes 3 years and 2 years respectively. But Germany's original higher education system consisted of the diploma, which took about 5 years, and then the magister, which took another 6 years. Compressing a 5-year degree into 3 has put students under a huge amount of pressure. Even the universities agree that they haven't got it right yet. Thomas Richter is the press spokesperson from Humboldt University in Berlin.
We agreed that we look at each and every course of study and see how the workload can be reduced, how this course can be reformed again. Now, with 200 different courses of study, this is not something that's going to happen in just 2 weeks. It's a process that really needs time, and it needs time to make this reform a good one.
But it's not just the workload. Students are also angry about overcrowded classrooms, recently introduced university fees, and the government's constant funding cuts to education. At Humboldt University in the centre of Berlin, the main lecture theatre is packed with students. They've been occupying the space for a week now. 22-year-old Lauren Balhorn is originally from the States, but he just completed his history degree a few months ago in Germany.
Basically, I'm protesting here so that what happens to the American university system doesn't happen to the German one. You know, I attended university in the United States and in Germany, and in Germany, I went here for free, and in the United States, I paid tens of thousands of dollars a year, and now I'm in a lot of debt. I think that even if the initial reforms that the German government is introducing for Americans seem pretty laughable, 500 euros a semester, wow, but it's just the beginning of a long chain of consequences that would turn the German university system to an even more elitist, more restricted system, only open to middle class and upper class children, and really only oriented towards training good workers for the German economy, which I think is the exact opposite of what a university should really be doing.
Lauren says the students are prepared to stay as long as it takes for their list of demands to be met.
So we're demanding that the federal government immediately fill initially the 180 million euro deficit in the budget so that no further cuts will be necessary. We're also demanding for a democratization of the university system. What it means is that universities would be run by a democratically elected assembly consisting of one-fourth professors, one-fourth administration, one-fourth non-academic staff, and then one-fourth students, so that the people who actually are affected by the decisions of the administration also have an equal voice in the decisions that are made.
Germany's education minister, Annette Schavan, says she understands the reasons for the students' grievances and acknowledges that mistakes have been made in converting the old degree system into the new one. But many students say this isn't enough. They want change. If there's no resolution in the next couple of weeks, students say they'll block the Education Ministry Conference in Bonn on the 10th of December. Cinnamon Nippard, FSRN, Berlin.
And that wraps up today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Today's headlines editor was Jess Burns. Washington, D.C. editor was Tanya Snyder. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Rose Katapchi and Scott Pham. You can visit us online at fsrn.org. You can send questions, comments, or news tips to comments at fsrn.org. Thanks for listening. In New York, I'm Doran Marino.